Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual, we've got Chris, Purnell, and Brooke. How is everyone doing?
Hey!
I'm eating chicken! I'm eating vegetables!
All of us patiently waiting for the other person to start.
I know, right?
That's why I leave it open-ended, so you could go in whatever order you want.
Thank you. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm doing okay-ish, I think. I have a doctor's appointment really early in the morning.
Oh, that's right.
And I,
it's an hour drive away, right?
Yeah, it's an hour drive away, and I need to be there like 15 minutes before Ashley gets home from work. So I'm hoping she's able to get out of work early tonight, or I'm going to have to be calling the doctor really early. Like, hey, I don't have a vehicle.
Wait, did I mishear that? You said you need to be there 15 minutes before she gets off from work, but it's an hour away
from work. Yeah.
So
like, realistically, I needed a 9:30 appointment and they gave me an 8 o'clock appointment.
Just making sure I hear that right. Basically it's saying that it's inevitable that you're going to be late, but it's the best you can do because
unless Ashley gets out of work early. And then if she gets out early and I get there on time, everything's good.
Fingers crossed.
Unless something bad is wrong with me. Which,
but do they at least know that?
There is a lot wrong with me, let's be fair.
Big same.
Hear ya, yeah.
Pernell's like, no, I'm good.
No, I am a friggin' wreck over here. I'm just trying to come back on.
Well, you're over there eating chicken and vegetables like you got your life together, man. So I don't know. I'm over here like I'm about to DoorDash some McDonald's. So I'm not even kidding. I'm going to have McDonald's tonight.
Chicken breast like an adult.
McDonald's. I rushed over to Sonic for dinner.
You gotta treat yourself.
Ooh, that's right. Chris, you were mentioning that you, in our one-on-one chat, that's right, jealous, a chat with Chris, one-on-one, that you got Sonic. What'd you get, dude?
Just the double burger with bacon.
Awesome.
Did you DoorDash that, Sonic?
No. I went myself.
Did it come with 50 rings?
How many rings?
Oh, my God. I can't believe him. I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to make you connect it. I'll give you a hint. Miles per hour. Okay.
I'm just shaking my head in disappointment over here.
Oh my
God. Hey, dad jokes apply. I'm just saying he got himself a supersonic. And that's all I'm saying. He had himself a supersonic delivery. And I'm okay with that. I'll keep it.
Dude, do they still have a
racing?
We did it.
We're doing
oh my God,
tonight.
You were saying that they still have a something.
You wanna know what's sad? I actually have not played a Sonic game newer than Sonic 3 and Knuckles. No.
I mean you sound like
Knuckles Chaotix.
Yeah.
You do sound like most people, so that's not really sad at all.
Yeah, but you know, still.
With that said, you should play other Sonic games. Get Generations for like $5 on like the eShop or not the eShop, but on like the freaking Xbox store or whatever. It's worth it.
Oh, you know what? Actually, I do tell a lie. I did play a little bit of Sonic Mania.
Wow.
Which is basically Sonic 3 again.
Yeah.
Pretty much. They're like, hey, do you hate all those 3D games? Let's just remove any changes we've ever made and give you that game again, but different stages. And honestly, I'm in the minority where I played that game and I was like, this makes me realize why the 3D games were better, at least not better in regards like, you know, no bugs or whatever, but I feel like it needed to go in that direction in some way because I realized that the 2D Sonic games were lacking something that the Mario games did for me. And it was weird, but the 3D Sonic games felt like they kind of had it. But with that said, I still like Sonic Mania. Don't get me wrong. It's a great game. Studio Opus is the best zone in the game.
I've seen people play them, though. I mean, like, I'm familiar with them, so, like, and the characters and stuff. So it's like, it's not like I'm totally missing out. It's just I just didn't ever buy them and play them myself.
I want to get into Sonic Frontiers. That one looks fun. That's the newest one that came out last year.
Yeah.
I day one it because I wanted to support it when everybody was hoping it would fail. And it turns out the game did really well. And there's like apparently DLC coming out soon. And from the sound of it, it did well enough that there will be more. Like, they're looking to follow up on that. I just hope that whatever they do, the worlds that they create are a little bit more involved. Like, there's more stuff going on in them. But otherwise, yeah, it looks like it's good. I can't comment on the game itself because, you know me, buy games I don't have time for. Big yippee-yippee. But I'm just glad it did well.
Yeah, cool. It looks like the Final Horizon is supposedly releasing this week.
Oh!
If I wish I didn't have to play the game before, I'd say request the code. Correct.
If I didn't have to play the game for that, like, request the code, I'll just do it right now.
Hey, Aki. You did it for snow! It's actually the first time. Very cool.
I heard the
very
blip, cool. I was like, it has to be Aki.
I actually thought it would be Jacob because I had summoned him, so this is a pleasant surprise. It'd be great to see my son, too, don't get me wrong, but...
It will always be Jacob Aki before never shows Jacob up. Coming in on a Brooke episode. That's just how the world works.
Exactly.
Okay, I can dig it.
Also, nice picture of the shirt, by the way.
Thank you, thank you. I've been planning that since I got the shirt in the mail. I was like, yeah. I actually like the shirt. It's really comfy.
Hyping up the show tonight, you tweeted out a picture wearing an SML podcast shirt. So that's cool.
Very cool.
Oh, that's so really cool. You bought one. Did you get the traditional one or did you get a new one?
I think it's a new one. It says, I fed Joe's cats, and it has a picture of two cats on it. It's cute.
It's one of the new ones that we have on the merch site through Stream Elements. Those original shirts that we did like 6 years ago or whatever, I have not done a second run of those.
They're still looking good, right? Aren't they still holding
up? Collectible.
They hold up really well. Like, mine are still in good shape, and I wear them a lot.
Still seems to be doing all right.
What's funny is, and I'm not even making this up, you guys don't have to believe me, but earlier today, I was wearing the Run BGM shirt from Pradell's podcast that I got, so that's pretty cool. That shirt comes free. I didn't really, like, pick it out or anything, but it's very cool. Love it. Also pretty soft shirt.
I mean, it's also the best one we did, as far as I'm concerned, along with the TGIF versus Capcom shirt.
I need to get me one of those shirts, too.
It's pretty cool, although I got a T. Oh, go ahead.
What? No, I was saying, which one? You said I need to get one. I was like, which one? The TGIF, the SML, or the Run VGM?
There's yes. Another one that you guys had.
We've had a couple. We had Lobster Racing. We had Lobster Run Racing. VGM.
That's the one. That's the one I like the most.
It's such a ridiculous concept.
I was pulling up your site right now just to be like, yes, Lobster Racing. I'm looking at it right now.
It was an inside joke, but you don't even need to be in on it to get it. It was like an episode of one of the live streams where we were just like talking, and we just came up with this game idea as a joke, and then we decided we had to actually design the game on the show. So we started talking about how it worked
before. That's amazing.
Yeah, like, that's the one I like the most. I'm gonna bookmark this. I might get this on my payday, which is this week.
They only go up to 3x per now. No!
I don't make the rules. It's the t-shirt. It's
spring, do they have Do they have ladies' cuts in Rhythm and Pixel shirts?
I believe they do.
Okay, cool.
I'm looking. I'm not seeing them. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I do see it. You have to go to similar products down there and then choose your cut.
It would feel awkward if I was like, nah, sorry, Brooke, this is a man's club. Like, how dumb would that be?
And also, that would
Lobster
be...
racing is only for boys.
I mean, traditionally. it was a D-bag move of me to ask you that on recorded live show. So,
DM. That's
fine. Luckily, the answer was good.
Yeah. Yeah, we got lucky.
I mean, if the answer was no, I mean, my logic would have been we need to look into that or figure out why there isn't one. But I was like, I'm pretty sure there is one. But if there wasn't, there was going to become one.
It's the future, baby. Women can listen to video game music, too.
You're damn right.
We marched and we got it. I don't know. I gotta say that really quick before we move on from SML shirts, I was honestly, Joe didn't pay me to say this, I was impressed by the variety. You can do like a heather gray, they have pink, and they have like, it was very hard for me to not get the pink because I have like a pink PC setup going on, you guys might have seen. But I got the Seafoam green, and it's honestly soft as heck. And I think there's like more than one girl's cut y'all offer too, so it's, that was pretty cool.
I know they give you like, you're allowed to pick 5 color options. So I tried to pick kind of like standout colors. Like you'll have a dark one there, you'll have a brighter one there. And then I tried to like throw in like a pink or a red or a green, just to mix it up, and so that not everything is just a black shirt.
I appreciate
all the time. All I wear are shirts.
I had to check my Discord right quick, but yeah, Spring is the same company that Super High Tops uses for our two shirts that we have. Yeah,
I gotta get a Super High Top shirt next. I collect them all. Aki, yeah. You got a shirt?
I'll drop it in the SML Discord.
Oh, sweet. Okay. No, I don't have a shirt. No.
Wow. All right.
I'm gonna change that. Skip that shirt.
Aki needs to order some SML shirts.
I need money that doesn't go towards Gunpla for that.
That's valid.
And that's kind of the problem, because I still have a couple $1,000 worth of Gunpla that I need to buy, so.
Oh, Lord.
How is that possible? How much does the average Gunpla in cost? I don't know.
The ones that I buy are usually called Master Grade. They're one of the larger ones. They cost around $50 to $60 base price, excluding taxes and shipping.
Woo!
Yeah, they're not cheap. High grades are the other ones I get, which are one of the smaller versions, which are like anywhere from 15 to 25, occasionally even $30 for part of the fine ones before taxes and shipping. So,
yeah, I was actually going to say that doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, it's not. It's pretty cheap, except for you have to also consider the fact that there are literally a few thousand different Gunpla.
I mean, you're talking to a Godzilla fan.
I don't want all of
fan.
Them, thankfully, but I do want a bunch.
You're talking to a Godzilla fan. There's like 1,000 like Godzilla things. You don't even get to paint them or anything. But they're like $200 each, like the figures and like action figures and stuff. Like
there's some Mega Godzilla model kits. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
One benefit to running out of actual space.
Yeah,
I ran out of space for this shit a long time ago. I just didn't care.
She's got like one of my friends. In the oven.
Yeah,
one of my friends.
Go ahead. I'm the big one. The last one that I actually bought is I'm going to be removing stuff off my
your kitchen island, right? Yeah, I remember.
Because it's not going to fit anywhere the fuck else. Literally, I have nowhere else to put it.
That's a cool place to put something, though. I mean, it's kind of got centerpiece action vibes going on.
Yeah, and I'll probably be putting other ones on it, too, just because cool. I'm going to run out of room.
I support this.
Yeah. Eventually, once I have money again, I don't have to fix up any more of my house. I have a room that I have a bunch of rooms that I don't actually use, but the one in the very front of the house, I plan on basically completely demolishing and rebuilding that room because it's trash. And I'm going to basically build an entire custom shelving unit that I'm just going to build myself for that entire room and make it just a Gunpla room and put all my Gunpla in there because it's a decent sized room. I just don't do anything. So
I don't do anything next. Either.
I don't know. I feel like you do.
The only thing I do is I try to get us on track every now and then. But most of the time,
seamless
for the most part.
Very nice.
Segway, you say.
I mean, I can cycle back to the shirt because the reason why I came in here for that was because I wanted to say those are titty kitties, and that just amuses me.
Oh my god! I'm asking titty for it.
Kitties.
Yeah,
we're bringing the vibes tonight. I can respect it.
Titty kitties. I heard.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought when I saw it. I was like, "That is hilarious." I have got to say that on stream today.
I'm a little disappointed. I didn't think of that. So thank you for coming in with that one.
So good.
Great googly moogly.
Awful. Should we get to reviews tonight?
Yeah, let's get in.
Sure.
Aki, are you gonna do one? Like, you're not. I don't think you even have one tonight, do you?
No, I came
I literally just came in just to talk about the titty kitties, and that was it.
Volunteered us into it.
Hey, did you like that pun in the tweet, though? I was like, join us for the show tonight. We've got some big ones, which is, you know, I was really
I liked it, yeah.
I'm trying to, you know, trying to spice it up with my...
I completely agree with you on that, but yes.
I'll tell you, I'm going to DM you a story about that later. Okay, let's segue.
Love it. Anyway, first game to talk about tonight, Wizardry Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord, developed and published by Digital Eclipse, released September 15th on Steam Early Access and GOG for $29.99. Wizardry Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord is a full 3D remake of the first game in the legendary Wizardry series of RPGs. Purnell, tell us about your time with Wizardry Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord.
So... this game is an interesting one for me to have both heard about and come across to review because I've played, I have very little experience with Wizardry, the franchise. I've played a ton of dungeon crawlers, but the only Wizardry I've ever played in my life is the Japanese spinoff one of the two that got actually released by Atlas called Wizardry Tales of the Forsaken Land. So for me, this was an interesting way to see what Wizardry originally was in a way that didn't require me to dig out an old NES and some antiquated graphics. And what I got was, well, an interesting element in the sense that it's very bare, as it probably should be because it came out in 1981, but also visually updated and nice approach to getting people to try this game. Because the idea behind this game is essentially very bare bones. It's you... being tasked with going to the depths beneath a castle to get to the lowest level of a dungeon. And the funny part is, that is pretty much the same premise that Wizardry Tales of the Forsaken Land had. 10 floors of a massive dungeon that you have to descend. But, unlike that game, this one comes with a lot of the caveats that were known for making this genre pretty brutal. And it's by design, not by fault. So... what do I mean by that? Well, let me just talk about the way the game starts out for you. The game gives you a general premise of what's going on, being that you want to get below this Mad King's castle. I barely paid attention to that because, again, this is that kind of game. And when it dumps you into the main town, they give you a starting loadout of 6 characters. You don't have to stick with them. In fact, they might not. They're very likely not even going to survive the game. But they give you that if you just kind of want to dip your feet in and just get rolling into the dungeon. Characters themselves have a number of different stats associated with them. The typical strength, vitality, piety, intelligence, luck, and speed. And these things not only denote performance in battle, but they also dictate what sorts of classes of the total of 8 you're even eligible to access. The games has a total of 8, 4 being made on typical classes, and then the other 4 being reserved as advanced classes. Those are classes that typically 9 times out of 10, when you roll a character, you will likely not be able to build the stats up to get one of these characters. It's just by default. That's how it's designed. But through leveling up your characters and buffing the stats in the right places, you may well be able to access these character builds and hopefully not lose them on your way. Class term is like, you know, what equipment you can use, what spells, if any, you can learn, and... believe it or not, that's pretty much it. And I should also mention, it's not just your stats, but also your alignment, because this is also brings that into play. Good, neutral, and evil. Evil characters
evil,
will not...
you're evil. You should mute your Steam Deck during the show.
Why? Are you listening to the fan whir?
I can hear something.
There's no music. Really? The only thing you can hear, if anything, is the fan whirring, but the volume is down.
Does the Steam Deck run that hot?
Depends on the game, but it's not really hot. Is that what you hear? No.
It's just when you're talking, it sounds like music in the background, but I guess it's just the fan. Wow.
It's totally the fan. Trust me. I know better than to have music playing.
I'll take my L. I'm wrong.
So yeah, but also your alignment being good, neutral, or evil. Good party members will not work with evil characters, and vice versa. Evil will not work with good. Once you are comfortable, you choose your party, you go decide whether or not you want to enter the dungeon, because the actual town doesn't have very many features. There's a shop to buy items, an inn to sleep, and the whole purpose of sleeping is to heal up HP with you buying a typical room. The more expensive the room, the more HP you'll heal. And it's per person, not for your party. So healing gets pretty pricey if you want to go that route. But also the reason why you want to stay at the inn is because you don't level up unless you earn the experience points and then take them to the inn to take a nap. So there is no getting a second wind in the dungeon because you just leveled up and got some stat bumps. Nope. You got to get out of the dungeon and tell the tale, baby. So that's the purpose of the inn. And then you have, like I said, the shop to buy things. The tavern, the only purpose of the tavern, annoyingly enough, is to add characters to your party that you created at the training grounds. So you create them at the training grounds, then go to the tavern to just add them. Later games in this franchise started giving you quests that you can access from like the taverns, and you can talk to some NPCs, but this game, not so much. Temples where you can go to kill yourself from for like curses and such. And also, in the event that your party member dies and you bring them out, you can potentially resurrect them by spending money, but the odds are in your favor or not so much in your favor because they can also turn to ash and become unresurrectable and just completely dead. You have no way of knowing for sure. But I pretty much described every facility in the town. But so once you're done deciding what you want to do there, you're ready to enter you into the maze and you get down and dirty. Now, modern games, modern dungeon crawlers on the list, we've gotten it good over time. The game will create a map for you as you go, and every time you return, you can just push the map button and boom, you can see everything you've done. Not in this game. This is retro. You enter the dungeon. They did give you a quality of life where they do map out where you're going, but they don't save the map. So if you leave, the map is gone, and you got to do it all over again. And I find that particularly hilarious because early on, I actually thought this game was randomly generating the map because of the fact that the map was gone when I came back into the dungeon. And that's usually why it is, because of roguelike. But nope, they expect you to either run this thing blind, which, by the way, if you do that, you're a freaking fool, or to map it out on paper. Or if you want to cheat, you can go to the NES FAQ and the maps are there too. But I'm not going to do that. Not me. No. But you can if you want.
Funny that I like the fact maps and everything. Love
so
it.
here's a little bit of fun fact about Wizardry and maps. So Wizardry 5, which is the one that's on the Super Nintendo, it has a hidden location, like on the first level or within like the first two levels, where you can actually purchase basically a magic map, which means that you no longer have to use a spell point to check the map. But it costs like 30,000 gold, where enemies are dropping like less than 10 typically.
So basically they're just to taunt you.
It's there to be like, well, if you really wanna, you can have this.
That's actually pretty friggin' funny.
Wizardry hates players. Of it.
Yes, it does. I'm glad you said that so I don't have to, but I'm going to still reiterate it. Wizardry hates you. hates you very much. Like the fact that you can spend very, very precious magic points just to get a blip on a radar that shows this is where you are in the dungeon. That is mean. And you have to earn that spell too. It's so brutal. This is one of those games where you can die immediately. Like you can just walk five steps, get into a battle, get ambushed, and your just entire party can get wiped out. You get an absolute wipe. It does not screw around. And when you die, there's no save points. There's no saving in the dungeon. There's no saving outside the dungeon. Whoa. In fact, the game just runs. So if you were
constantly saving.
Yep. If you're like, no, screw this. I hate what's going on. I quit. You just exit out the game and come back. It's going to put you right back where you left off. And when you die, everyone stays dead. And you have to create a new party to go down and get your old stuff back. So while you can't necessarily have a game that you can't win, you can have yourself in a situation where you get your one party that you've been working on so far into the dungeon and then they die and you're practically replaying the game because you have to build a brand new party up and make them strong enough to go down there and retrieve your old stuff.
Yeah, you have to rescue your old team.
Mm-hmm. Or at least their goods. Well, I guess if you get down there, you can take their corpses back up, I wager, to try to resurrect them. But it's brutal. You will suffer in this game. And that, again, that's by design. This isn't one of those things where it's like, if only they did X. No, that's the premise. Wizardry does not like you. And this is one of those things where once you complete it, you can tap, you can beat your chest in and say, I pulled this mess off. And I can tell you, even though I haven't played, aside from this one, of course, the one I played was a bit more forgiving, but still brutal. And I can tell you, this game made me want to go back and finally finish that. Because I got to the final floor, put the game down, and came back and forgot what I was doing because it had a lot of systems in play that I didn't remember. So I was like, well, I don't know how to beat this dragon. I quit. I got to start over. But this makes me want to go back to that because this game, it is dungeon crawling at its purest form. There's a reason why dungeon crawling became so popular. It started from somewhere, and these bits are still freaking good. It's just, you got to go in knowing that you're not getting freaking Mary Skelter here.
And even, I'm sorry, I keep butting in, but, you know, like,
yeah!
Like my jam.
I want you to butt in because Wizardry is your jam.
Well, I'm going to butt in because Jordan650 just subbed for the third month. Thank you so much,
Jordan. Hey, thank you, Jordan.
Who's I love?
I know we have the sound sample, but it's funnier to just do it.
I know. I'm too lazy to open the thing.
I love our vocal air horns. It's like my favorite.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So it's not as good. Not as catchy.
Wow. Sorry, I can't be her. Perfect. Oh my God.
Anyway.
Chris was talking. Yeah. I want to hear the thing. What were you saying now?
Okay, so I was just gonna say that, like, in terms, like, I'm a big fan of Wizardry, and in fact, Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord was ported to the NES back in the day, and I have that and the second one, the Knights of the Diamond, but which sounds like it should have been a baseball game, but anyways, so like, yeah, I'm pretty familiar with the series in this particular game. And like, I just want to say that, like, two things about the difficulty. One is that you're not meant to just go in and level up and then win. It's all about building an engine for survival. Like that's what it is that you need to drive across the country. And yes, you could walk there slowly, but it's more about building your own car out of, you know, the systems that you have available. So that's what, like, Wizardry is all about. And that extends to, like, all the games that were inspired by it, like, you know, Etrian Odyssey and, you know, well, Etrian Odyssey before casual mode. Now you can just breeze through Etrian Odyssey. That's no problem. And
are
that's
you talking
fine
about after
too.
Four or whatever?
At four, actually. Four had casual mode. But and all the HD remasters of 1 through 3 have picnic mode. Even they have an even easier version. But that's getting into the weeds. What I'm saying is that the difficulty of Wizardry is what it, you know, that is what is the selling point of it, is that it is a almost a puzzle of, like, how am I going to build this engine to survive this dungeon? And like, it did so well in Japan initially, like the computer version did so well in Japan, that where they actually have way more Wizardry games than we do.
Yes, they do.
That you can thank Wizardry for being the basis upon which all JRPGs are based. Like, you know, I mentioned in my last review of the retro mystery thing that, you know, when Yuji Horii was building this mystery game, this murder mystery game, he was like, what if I put this menu on an RPG like Wizardry and made it easier? And then that was Dragon Quest. And then Final Fantasy came from Dragon Quest, and everything else came from, you know, everything else. Like, there's Ultima in there too, but it's like, Ultima's still like kind of a similar vibe. But like, yeah, like, Wizardry is such a foundation for, like, the entire RPG genre, like, no matter which direction you're approaching it from. So you got to respect it, at least.
That is true. Because the thing is, I was trying to read up on it before, because at one point I was like, is this the first dungeon crawler? And it turns out this wasn't the first dungeon crawler, but
no, but it does
the
go
first
back
one to
the
utilize.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
But it did turn out, from what I read, that it was the first party based dungeon crawler to utilize Dungeons and Dragons rule set. So it was like the first party based dungeon crawler, and the first one to use, like, that concept of, like, you know, I guess, like, class systems and, like, the armor classes and all that good stuff. But like you said, everything built off of that to become much more. But it doesn't mean that the original and then the sequels to the original are any less good. They're still freaking great. But I think it's kind of like you said there, like, from my limited time with the series, it wasn't, I mean, I never thought of it so much as being an engine, but I did get the idea of being like, okay, I need to have a small reserve party that can come in and resurrect and restore my stuff if I lose it. But my ultimate goal is to lose no one, because that's time lost if they die. So when you're going through and you're managing, you get to the point where you start to find shortcuts to get back out, or you find yourself like, okay, we're limping here. I got to try to see if I can get back out before everybody gets wiped out. And you get to the exit, your heart, your chest is actually beating. Like, you're actually stressed out and tense. Like, am I going to get out? Am I going to get out? Oh, crap. Five shadowy vagabonds. This isn't good. It's like stab, stab, stab.
Oh, but I have been there.
And that's what makes this special. So if you don't like that, if you hear what we just said and you're like, no, I don't like games that quote unquote waste my time, I want to be able to just win by pressing on, you ain't gonna like this, because it is very possible you will play this game and never succeed. That's fine. That's the nature of the beast. But if you're the type that is okay with taking a system, saying, I will put the time that I've got into it, and wherever I get, and that's fine with me, I think you'll like this. Just know, again, going in, this is not Mary Skelter. This is not the modern JR, the anime dungeon crawlers that we've got. And it does not have those.
It's not
like,
Sakura Dungeon.
It's not Sakura Dungeon. This is wizardry, and it hates
what
you.
What it is, though, is it is early access. So they will be adding to the game over the next few months. They say that the game will go up in price as content is added. Right now it's $30. Is it worth getting in on the ground floor at 30? Should people wish list it and keep their eye on it? What are your thoughts on Wizardry?
Well, that's the interesting element there, right? Like, I think the game is cool in its own right now. So knowing that just by the trial and error and the failing of it all, you're going to spend time in this game. I think it's worth 30 right now. I'm actually also curious what they can really add. I would like them to add things like new equipment that wasn't in the original game, because that's one thing I did look at. The original weapons table, whew, there was not a lot of equipment in that game. But if they did some weird stuff like that, like added some like side dungeon floors or something like that, that'd be awesome. Either way, it's worth the base cost right now, even. It's a good game.
Cool. Sounds good.
Bye. I should say that.
All right. Next game, moving on. Next game to talk about. Oh, Chris, did you want to say something else?
Oh, no. I was just going to butt in with one last little fun fact about Wizardry, is that the original game actually predates graphics. It was a text-based game.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I'm glad you said that, because that's something I should have mentioned about this for Trivia Nuts.
That's really cool.
Do you remember the amount of lines of code they used to write it? Cause they use that as a point, but I do not remember the amount of lines they used.
No, I sure don't. That sounds like a good thing to know, though.
At the time, it was an impressive amount of lines of code, and they built this off of the original script, so much so that in the lower right corner of the game, you can see the original PC interface, and you can expand it if you want to just overlay what you're doing, so you can see what it was and what it's become. And it's honestly really awesome to look at. Like, bumping into a wall and watching a little text thing go, ouch, ouch, ouch. It made me laugh a little
bit. That's awesome. It's cool as hell. I got this wish listed, but I don't want to buy it on Steam. I really hope it comes to consoles, but I'll buy it on Steam if I have to.
I wager if it gets, once the full release happens, there's a chance it'll come to console, I would think. I guess if they're listening to this review, you guys let us know. Is this one of those games where you feel like it might be a little bit heady to port it to a console? Let Chris know now.
Yeah, don't make me buy Sakura Dungeon to get that, just to scratch that itch. Speaking of big ones.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, we got to move on. Next game. Y'all are crazy.
That delay.
Yeah, I was muted. I was muted, and then I unmuted and did it again. It was real awkward on my end, honestly.
I appreciate that, and also... That. I totally sensed that, too. I was like, oh, I could tell that she just unmuted and said that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay, anyway, Joe.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is Fae Farm, developed and published by Phoenix Labs, released September 8th on Steam for $39.99. Deluxe edition with DLC is $59.99. The Switch version is $59.99, physical and digital, and includes the DLC. Escape to the magical life of your dreams in Fae Farm, a farm sim RPG for 1-4 players. Craft, cultivate, and decorate to grow your homestead, and use spells to explore the enchanted islands of Azoria. Brooke, tell us about your time with Fae Farm.
All right. Well, as you all know, I judge a farming and life sim game by three things. Number one, are there rabbits in the game? Not just playing. Number two, do I start a gaming session by, stay with me here, doing weed, then after a few in-game days, like 30 minutes, hour in, what I would typically be getting bored in other games, do I actually forget to do more weed because I'm having so much fun in this life sim game? Not just playing. But seriously, this game has both of those things. What's the serious version of that? Because whether you're 420 friendly, whether you're an old stick in the mud listening to this podcast, no matter where you're coming from, what your hobbies are, weed, LSD, reading books, whatever you like, if you consider playing this game, farming and life sim game featuring magic, fishing, dungeoneering, so much more than that. This game's actually got a lot going on. You played so-called farming sim games before. You probably dabbled in a little Stardew Valley, maybe even a little Rune Factory for you. You probably wouldn't mind a game that keeps the day packed with just tons of different options and makes you make choices, just like in real life when you're not feeling super depressed. You really don't want to go, in this case, to your in-game bed because you're having too much fun. There's always something else to do, something satisfying that adds a little bit more to your character, your farm, and your story. And the best, most popular games of this subgenre not only have tons of stuff to do and you got to make choices in your resource management of your own time in those games, but they also keep it pretty cozy vibes-wise on top of that. It's a hard line to toe, but it's been done before. And the legends that came before us that set the bar, they just set the bar so high. Every month, we're seeing new farming sim, life sim, relationship builder, gardening games, whatever you want to call them. We see new ones come out. And what do these games boast in their marketing without really saying it? What do they imply? What do we see all over the reviews? What are they trying to get us to think? If you like Stardew Valley, if you like Harvest Moon, if you like Animal Crossing, in some cases, you might enjoy this. Well, emphasis on the might, 9 times out of 10. If you're new to the hobby, you've likely been burned before. I'm not going to name no names, but very few games scratch the Stardew Valley itch. Very few games scratch the Harvest Moon itch. Fewer still scratch an Animal Crossing itch, even though there is a lot of these games have so much more going on, quote-unquote, game-wise, than something like Animal Crossing, which some have compared to more of like a Zen garden experience. Say what you will about AC, the vibes are super strong. The environment's super, super strong and very immersive. Then sometimes we get a game that packs in lots of action, gives us plenty to do, but doesn't know how to balance it. And it's like overwhelming. It's not fun to play. I've played those games as well. So that's the big question with Fae Farm. Does it scratch any of those itches? Does it scratch more than one of those itches on the coziness and the exciting times in the day? I want to go on record to say it does. It will for most people. But if I were going to shell out pretty reasonably big bucks for this game, which fortunately I didn't have to, Joe is very kind and requested this game for us to review. If I was going to shell out, even though I think this game scratches those issues, I want to know a couple things before going in first. Or rather, in this hypothetical scenario, I would have rather known before I started playing, so I wouldn't have gotten my hopes up or maybe even be slightly disappointed or just weirded out that it would be over otherwise. I'm going to give this game a bit of a hard time about a couple things, but I want to go into this saying officially on the record, the devs have my respect. This is a gorgeous and it is a fun game. And even things that I didn't personally love did feel like conscious choices. They felt like choices that were very, very on purpose and not an oversight. Except maybe the jumping, we're going to get to that in a minute. This is a big game. It's already gaining some waves. You can go anywhere for a review or a let's play that's going to give you a breakdown of the setting and the backstory and what it looks like and stuff. I'm going to focus on what surprised me about this game because it was a lot of good things and it was a few things I really didn't love but seem probably fine. All right. Now, I love my cozy and farmy sim games. I have literally thousands of hours in Stardew Valley and Animal Crossing franchise, respectively. I'm not kidding. Those are my games hours. But I mostly want to review these sort of games for us because there's a lot of overlap between people being interested in this game and my dating sim communities, like the Twitter Otome community. A lot of people want to try this out because this has relationship building. And I want to check this out specifically with that in mind and touch on it first, because we can date in this game. We can get married and have relationships. We can start a family. If you saw my tweet earlier, you saw a crazy menu screen that shows just some of the things you can do in this game. Tools and crafting, raw materials, refined goods, gardening and crops, flowers, critters and creatures, forage, food and drink, dungeoneering, magic, animal. So I screwed up my notes, you guys. I fucked this up. Construction, fashion, and skill perks. Dude, that's just one of the menus. This game's got so much going on. And this menu screen doesn't even show you that I'm reading from. Doesn't even show you relationship building, which is a different menu subscreen. Let's break that down really quick. What do I look for in relationship building as somebody coming from that angle? Whoa, sorry. I scrolled down and lost my place. I'm all over the place tonight, guys. So sorry about this. Okay. Number one, gayness. Can I be gay? Because I want to. If I'm a female character, I want to be free to date women. If I'm a male character, I want to date men. But best of all, it would be so wonderful if, and this doesn't happen in almost any game, it would be so wonderful if I didn't have to pick a gender to begin with and I could play as non-binary if I'd like. And if in that case, every romance option would be available to me either way. That's an inclusive experience for me. Pleasant surprise, yes, this game has that. And if you look at the cover of this beautiful game's cover. Okay. All right, you guys. I need to get it together over here. There's a rainbow across the front of the game. And I feel like that's kind of a hint of what to come. We have some androgynous love interests. We've got all kinds of stuff going on here. So super pleasant surprise. This game has that. I find it to be above average inclusive in this department. Really impressed here. Maybe the best I've ever seen in one of these games. It's inclusive, not even just for gender, but like there are disabled people in town. Some of them romanceable. There's a guy in a wheelchair. There are, even when you're doing character creation, it looks simple and cartoony if you've checked out the screenshots, but character building, you can do scarring and different skin conditions that would affect uneven skin pigmentation across the face. My character has a big dark patch over half my face because, fun fact, I'm role-playing as my pet rabbit, who also has that kind of little face. Two. What do I look for next in a relationship? Depth of the relationship. Is it a good? Is it a big part of the game or is it an afterthought? Does it feel real? Friendship and dating. Both are relationships to me. And I want to build those relationships if a game boasts that. What makes dating game players feel satisfied here? Do we get cutscenes, cinematics, where something cool happens, even if it's not fully animated? Do we get CGs? Or to our lame non-visual novel players out there, content graphics, special illustration showing us a moment in time. This sometimes it's a kiss scene, something to enjoy and to sort of commemorate a romantic experience or just a really wonderful moment of friendship blossoming. Unpleasant surprise, no. This game doesn't really have that going on. Although, like a lot of these games and real life, after you get married, there's not much to do with the person. They're just sort of there. You kind of stop hanging out, you know? Just kidding, that didn't land like I wanted to, sorry. Not a lot to do after marriage. Relationship building is not the center of this game, but I think it's fine, and I'm going to explain a little bit more about that. Before we get there, let's talk about user friendliness, user interface, whatever you want to call it. Does this game look good? Do the menus look good? Is it easy to use? Yeah, it's beautiful. This game is gorgeous, honestly. It's a little childish looking for me in the humanoid character design department, but that is truly just me. It's like me saying that the illustrations for something like Hearthstone is a little childish for me, which it is. Does the game control easy? Does it feel easy to use? Does it make sense? My answer, yes and no. Everything except for the jumping. Let's start with yes. This game is out for Switch and Steam at least, maybe more stuff. I'm reviewing the Steam version. I play with both mouse and keyboard and controller. It works awesome both ways. It's flawless. My preference is controller, no complaints there. Even though my preference is controller, I have a really shitty controller. I need to get a new one, so it disconnects all the time. When it disconnects, if I reconnect it, the game picks that back up automatically. No having to restart the program to connect the controller here. That's great. What do I not like about this game's controls? The jumping. You may have to try it yourself or watch a Let's Play or video review to see what I'm talking about, but it's kind of insane. I'm glad we get jumping in this game, because another thing I want to touch on real quick is this truly is an open world game. There's no, what do you call it, League of Legends-esque lanes to stay in here where you're looking at a lush green screen, but you can really only walk certain ways and you're not really exploring anything. This game's open world. You can like jump on top of waterfalls. You can jump on top of roofs in this game. Pretty cool objectively. But the jumping is hideous. And it feels just kind of weird and unfinished to me. Devs, I gotta tease y'all about this. What is going on here? This isn't a physics simulator, you guys. This is a cartoony, cozy experience. You've given me such a weird level of freedom here that personally, it takes me out of the game a little bit in my nice immersive experience here, which is weird to say. I couldn't have imagined this until I experienced it in the game. It feels weird. It's too big. The jumps are too big. It feels weird. It's too big. It's too wobbly. I'm glad Jacob isn't here right now so he doesn't make a joke about this line, because I really set him up here, but I am talking about jumping. Devs, just like, why? You guys probably think I'm going ham, but I've talked to two complete strangers about this game this week randomly through work, and the first thing I said, I was like, jumping in Fae Farm, am I right, ladies? And they were like, haha, Brooke, you're so funny, heart emoji. Nah, I'm just kidding. They didn't say that, but they did laugh, and they were like, yeah, the jumping's so weird. Why is it like this? I was like, I know, right? So I gotta mess with y'all for that. I don't know if that's gonna be tweaked in updates. It does feel like a choice. So I got a smile on my face as I tease about this. But know that going into the game, because it's very bizarre and it was a little off-putting as well. Especially compared to all the other different controls of the game, which feel, I don't even know how to say it, almost have a 2D charm as opposed to the 3D world we're working with. What else do I like about just the raw usability of this game and like how it works? You don't have to take out or switch tools. You just press X to do everything. If I'm weeding, I'm pressing X. It's going to switch to my tool automatically. There are some special tools like a magic staff that come in later. Magic's a really big part of this game, both in and out of dungeons. But if I'm chopping a log, if I'm pickaxing a rock, if I'm pulling some wild arugula out of the ground, which is something you could do, you can make yourself a nice salad. There's all kinds of different plants wild to forage. You're still just pressing X and it's going to change automatically. And that's pretty neat. I don't think I'd like that in every game, but I think it works really well here. I think they pulled that off. Another thing I love is you don't have to collect items by pressing X over and over and over again, or enter on your keyboard or clicking with your mouse. You don't have to collect items. They just draw to you if you stand close enough. In sort of a magnet way. When you're putting up your inventory from your pockets to the storage on your farm, there's a store all existing stacks option where with one button, if it's something that you don't keep on you to walk around and you would want to store up to build things, anything, typically rocks, wood, sand, etc. Even if you've caught a bunch of mussels on the beach, which is different from fishing, by the way, it's super dense, it will store those for you. You can store all existing stacks and... it's amazing. I love it. I was like, why have I not played any farming games that have this option? I almost want to ask Chris, like, do other farming games I've missed have this? This is really good. It was seamless.
I don't know farming games all that well, so yeah.
Okay, I can't word. Really. All right, I gotcha. Okay. Well, these are all great things. I love fishing in this game. Fishing's, you know, bug catching, all that kind of stuff are normally a big part of this game. It's a really big part of this game, and it's done incredibly well. In a lot of games, it's not. Love, love, love fishing in this game. Most games, I don't like it. I know a lot of my peers feel this way. Some people just cuss about Stardew fishing. I actually like Stardew fishing, but I understand why people hate it. And the learning curve is very steep. This is fun and it honestly feels like fishing too. It's also like very, how do I say it, intuitive. You're actually reeling in the fish and then the line on your cast will turn red if it's like running from you too far. It's going to take you a lot longer to reel in a fish that you catch. You cast your line like across the lake than if it's right next to you on a bridge that you're walking on. Really cool. Can't say how impressed I am about the fishing. You can't read this because you're not me reading my notes right now, but I spelled that real fishing, R-E-E-L. Get it? Okay, let's move on.
I get it.
Thank you so much. For now, that was a really good laugh. Thank you. There's so many things like fishing in this game you can do, by the way. Not only can you catch bugs, but you can catch creatures, which are different. Bug catching would be different from frog catching. We also have foraging on the beach. We have a different type of foraging in the woods. This includes magical creatures as well. We don't even have time for all that, but I really like it and you should try it. I think it's great. Close jumping is the thing I hate most about this game. We've established that. Close second is the laughing. Remember how I said I talked to two strangers at work and made fun of the jumping and they immediately knew what I was talking about? Well, I didn't make that up. That really happened. Thank you. Guess what else I made fun of to them and they immediately knew what I was saying? The laughing. Oh my gosh. In this game, your player character laughs. So does every NPC all the time. Maniacally. Like, it kind of just makes it feel like a kid's game, which is fine because it has a magical, very colorful environment. It's clearly supposed to appeal to all ages, but the laughing is intense and it never stops. Did I pull up a weed? Cool, my character's gonna like laugh creepily for like a minute. Did I find a new furniture recipe in town randomly? Yeah, my character is just like, now he's like, ha, 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 ha. And it takes like 20 seconds. It's
Woody Woodpecker laughs.
Dude, it's insane. That like my character has so many different types of surprised laughs she can whip out when she finds something, and it's just like, this is so much. And like, hey, I'm teasing him here, but in order to turn off the laughter of even me or the NPCs, I would have to turn off all sound effects. There's nothing to toggle, like just turn off the voices, you know what I mean? And I love the sound effects in this game. I'll talk about that in just a second, then I'll wrap it up. But like, yeah, I hate the laughing. It's so weird. My gosh. I says to the ladies at work, I says, I hate the laughing. They want me to marry one of these people? Yeah, right. Kids games vibes only. And I play anime dating games where everyone's in high school, including myself. So that's really saying something. And this girl who just started here at work, I shouldn't have even gotten this deep with her. She was like, that's so true. Oh my God. So across the board, these are two very bizarre parts of the game. I don't think they're going to stop people, but you're going to hear other people than me talking about this, I really feel. Okay, wrapping this up, let's talk about what else I loved in this game, and then I'm cut off because I could have made this review insanely long. I played a lot of this game. I love the colors and the aesthetic. It's beautiful. This game has so much magic in that, and I mean it literally and figuratively. The early game, like, you could watch a Let's Play for a few hours and you're just not even probably going to approach like the magic in this game and some of the deeper plot in this game. And I think it's beautiful. I think it's super well done. And I think it's just freaking fun. In addition to just gorgeous art, although I have said it is a little childish for me, there's amazing environmental animations in this world you're exploring. I don't want to give away a bunch of spoilers, but there's like a bunch of thorns in the town and they're like giant magical thorns and they sort of just writhe around stuff, and when you get rid of them, the animation is really cool too. And there's so many things like the water and just like the sounds that make this game feel really alive like that. Cooking's awesome. Y'all know I love cooking in games. It starts easy and basic. You can grill a shrimp over the fire and that's all you're doing. But later on, you can build kitchen stuff and make cakes and stuff. And that's super, super cool. I do feel like we get enough time in the day, but not so much time in each in-game day, which is timed like most of these games, that we get either tired of it, we run out of things to do. I've reviewed a few farming games for this show at this point, and I feel like most of them I run out of things to do before the day runs out. This game, I never feel like that, and I also feel like I get enough time and I'm not pissed off because I wanted to do too many other things. It feels very fair. Like, it toes the line so well to make that fun for me. Inventory doesn't go in your house. You don't have to figure that out. All inventory goes into the shed. I do kind of like this. There's very modular farm building in this game, and you're kind of not going to understand that unless you've already been frustrated by a lot of games that boast this but don't actually have it. There are very pretty flower and vegetable beds in this game, and they're super modular and they look great. I actually already got my friend Beth to get this game because I was talking about that. I was like, cool. Yo, these are dope. And she was like, that's pretty cool. And she's played like way too much of it at this point. So very gorgeous, satisfying ASMR and immersion effects. So good when you're picking berries, like it just sounds so satisfying. And it makes each action when you press X to do anything, even if you're just foraging for something, very, very tactically satisfying, so much so that I found myself like wanting to keep those on, even though I really want to turn off the laughs and the voices with everybody. Although also the voices are doing kind of like a Sims thing where they have like their own fake language. And a lot of the time it sounds like baby talk. It's fine, but just know that going into it, if that turns you off. Cleaning up your farm of logs, of rocks, of arugula, weeds, everything's very, very, very satisfying. Picking berries is the most satisfying thing that's ever happened to me in this game. Is it weird that I never want to weed my farm? The weeds are too beautiful. They are gorgeous flowers. What the heck? There's a bajillion plants to plant. There's flowers. I promise I'm wrapping this up.
I don't believe you.
It's almost over. I've got like a few more lines, I swear. I messed up my notes again, and I talked about Beth again later into the thing. But let's talk about the flower beds right here before we do the rating. They are the prettiest crop and flower beds I've ever seen. They're clean, they're cute, they blend into the farm. And most importantly, I don't know how to describe this because I'm going to compare it to other games. It's not just like three crop beds that are predetermined and look super ugly and you don't get to pick where they go. Like any recent Story of Seasons game and most recent Harvest Moon games in like the last 10 years. when I am chopping wood or hammering some rocks and I accidentally weed, I'm like, crap, because I really want to keep that weed. It's too beautiful. And that's just saying something. And finally, I like the aiming in this game. Since it is sort of a 3D game and you're probably going to be using controller a lot, since the farms are so modular, there's tons of tiny, tiny squares all over the place, and each square represents probably something different you can do on your farm because it's just jam-packed. When you're aiming, this goes back to usability a bit. It is easy, even though there's so much to do, because the square you would hit in theory, if you whipped it out right now in front of everybody, once again, so happy Jacob isn't here, is outlined in a little translucent gold box. Nifty. And best of all, it will go into rating. There's even these little magical swirls that like cascade across the item, or the tiny square on the farm that you've selected. And it's a really nice environmental effect, and it's very pretty and cute. Okay, I'm done.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I've had a lot of caffeine. Sorry, I'm all over the place today, guys. This has been a very long day.
Was
it coffee?
Yeah, no, it was an energy drink. It was an Alani cherry slush flavor.
Oh, sounds good.
Those are so good.
It's a good brand. And Asti are one of the quote-unquote healthier energy drinks, too.
Yeah.
There's such thing as a healthy energy drink. That sounds like an oxymoron.
I said healthier. Healthier. Actually, there are supposedly healthy ones, too. They were like, oh, we just use like pure nothing but herbs, which means you can question whether or not it's going to do the job or not, but I'm good with a placebo.
It's like, what kind of herb? Because like salvia is pretty messed up. So makes you think.
Oh, as you like the ginseng. Like we put ginseng in here.
Oh, that's fine.
It's like natural. Yeah.
Can you grow that in Fae Farm?
You know, I can't say that you can't, because I have not yet accessed all the plants available to me, which, hey, that's pretty cool.
No, I don't think it's M-rated, so it can't be that bad. But
truth, okay.
Fae Farm, it clocks in at $40 for the regular edition on Steam, $60 for deluxe, and then the Switch version is $60, physical and digital, that includes the DLC. What are your thoughts on this?
I had a good time teasing this game a bit today and listing off some stuff I wish was different for my personal enjoyment. But like I said at the beginning, it felt like everything I didn't like in this game was at least a conscious choice for player enjoyment and just didn't hit the mark for me. This game is objectively great. But community mods, we need you immediately to give us a way to turn off the voices. This is your call to action. I want to say this is a deep game. There's so much to do. There's so many areas to unlock. This is not a 10-hour game. It's probably not a 30-hour game for most people, even if you're going to get a little tired of it. I wish relationship building were deeper because I'm that bitch. But games like this have so much going on. Like, I don't think it gets a lot better than this in this subgenre, sure, especially when it comes to relationship building crammed on top of all the other things we have. While some people might be a little dismayed, relationship building is a bit deeper, and sure, Stardew kind of takes the cake here. We get character portraits, we get cutscenes, we get all kinds of special dialogue, but not a lot happens after you get married in Stardew Valley either. I think Fae Farm is bringing just as much relationship building as you can ask for in this game. I think it has more than Rune Factory. I think it has double the relationship building as Rune Factory, if that means anything to you. And we have, in my opinion, twice as many things to do even outside of relationship building as we do in the Rune Factory franchise. This game's going to keep you busy. And even if you end up watching a Let's Play of this game for like an hour to see if you like it, that's not even going to be a good representation of the game experience, because so much unlocks later. This game's got furniture. It's got decorating. You can craft your own furniture. There's tons of items. They look really good. This game has clothing. It gets pretty deep in the clothing and personal styling department. It does feel like a piece of inclusivity as well. There's cooking. There's so much magic. And I just think this is a clear and away buy. I think I love it. And I don't think it does the exact same things as Animal Crossing or Stardew Valley, but I think if you're sitting there missing those games, you do really need to try that. And I don't say that lightly.
So it gets the thumbs up, yes?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Any other thoughts on it?
Nope, I think I better be good after all that. Thank you for letting me attack that. This is a deep game, and it costs a lot of money. So thanks for letting me go into that.
Hey, you want to make sure it's a good review, right?
Yeah, yes.
You're as in-depth as I think anyone on this show gets. Maybe Purnell.
I'd say she's the most in-depth.
Ooh, I don't want to take that crown for Purnell.
Unless it's a retro game, then Chris's knowledge is unmatched.
Yeah. Aw, thanks.
And that's always awesome.
Which I'm sure we'll get to in a little bit. But the next game we got to talk about is Summum Eterna, developed and published by Eternum Game Studios. It released September 14th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Summum Eterna is a fast-paced roguelite inspired by the Metroidvania Eterna Noctis. Create your own worlds, challenges, difficulty, and influences in each new run. Die, learn, become stronger, and achieve victory. Death is inevitable, but glory is only for the chosen. Pernell, have you been chosen?
Nope, I've been chosen to die a lot. Oh, but that's fine. I mean, that's the nature of the beast here. I mean, because while this is definitely easier than Eterna Noctis, it's still challenging, too. This is their take on the concept of the roguelite dungeon, or I won't call it dungeon crawl, but just the roguelite 2D platformer. And I feel like they did a pretty decent job with it, too, because while I wasn't originally feeling the draw, as I played more of it, it started to click with me in just the right ways where I think it is. I'm kind of spoiling my take on it already. I think it's a solid entry to this genre. So the idea behind this is that you're the king of darkness. You're basically preparing yourself for your internal war, or the next bout in your eternal war against the goddess of light. And you're working to kind of beef yourself up, prepare yourself in battle. And you're doing this by progressing into a variety of different realms and ultimately, I guess, conquering them. Because the dialogue just seems to be almost like light and airy with him just going to different places and be like, I want to talk to the guy that runs this joint. And the people are like, you don't have the right to that. What makes you think you're a god worthy of our lord? And he's like, I'm the king of darkness. I'm worthy of whatever the hell I want to be worthy of. What are you talking about? That's the kind of dialogue we're looking at here, but it's fine. I mean, it works for the concept of the game. But I feel like what this game does in the roguelike genre in that capacity, I think stands above what I'm used to seeing in games like this. I'll get to the thing that makes it stand out the most in a minute, but for now, I'll just talk about the basics of it. Being that when you go into an environment to battle, you have access to one of three different weapon types. You have swords, which is basically your quick combo weapon. You have scythes that are slow but powerful. And then you have pistols. I have no idea why you don't just always use pistols. Because once I unlocked a pistol, I felt no desire to ever use a different weapon. I'm sure someone who's more pro at this than I am will give you a better reason as to why you'd want to do that. Maybe because of some of the better effects of some of the weapons in the game. But no, I'm sorry. All distance pew 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 action. That's where I was at. But you get to choose one of these three types of weapons that go in to start. You start with the sword and you unlock the other two weapon types as you play the game. But as you go, you will be tasked with going into an environment, a series of interconnected rooms. And your goal in this environment is to find the exit portal to leave. Now, as you're running around this place, you'll come across a variety of monsters. They all hit really hard. Their way you can fight back normally, it just depends on the weapon mostly, but for the most part, you have your basic attack, you have a jump, you have a double jump, you have a dash. That is your primary sense of maneuverability, and then your weapons for doing massive damage. Weapons typically have a normal attack and a sub version of this attack, and depending on the weapon you get, that sub attack may be different. Like, for example, one of the earlier guns I came across that I really liked fired a bullet, and the sub attack of the gun is a pretty much a heavy bullet. Think of like a grenade launcher. But this weapon, when you fired the sub version of it, it hit the wall and released tentacles from the wall. And the tentacles would grab at any enemies near it, and it would suck their health out and give it to you. It was one of my primary ways to heal myself, because healing does not come cheap in this game. If you don't find abilities that will heal you, you may find it in treasure chests, you may find it from enemy drops, but much of the time you'll be struggling to get your health back. But that's fine. That's the nature of the beast. But you'll be running around trying to defeat enemies to get, you know, basically just essence points, which I'll talk about what they can do later, and ultimately get to the portal to get to the next area. Then the next area is sort of like the second area of that environment. And when you're in this space, you'll be fighting and looking for three keys, which you can use to unlock the portal to what will then be the boss battle for that region. And if you beat that boss battle, well, I don't know. I haven't beaten the boss because goddamn, this game beat the stuff out of me. Typically with bosses, I can get the bosses. The bosses have been showing me the business so far. But you might be asking, okay, what area do you go? What's the first stage? What's the second stage? What's the third stage? And well, I guess it's probably time to talk about what I like about this game mostly. And then I'll talk about what the other general items do. You don't, the levels aren't ordered. The levels are determined by the world seed you go into. So you see, typical roguelike games, when you go into an environment, the game has a seed. You don't see the seed, but that's a description. And the seed is what determines everything that's going to be in the place you're exploring. Where enemies are there, where they're at, the room layout, all that stuff. Well, this game, you get access to a good chunk of what those seeds actually are. Like, the different effects associated with them. Like, how strong are the enemies there? You know, how much money do they drop? How much dark matter drops? How much resources do you get? All sorts of stuff. As well as the environment you're going to be spending your time in as well. So, you might go to your next stage. You'll go to the space where it's pretty much like a seed garden to choose your next seed, which determines the next stage you're going to go to. And you're like, well, I like this one because I need more dark matter and I need more money so my runs feel a little bit smoother. But as a result, all the enemies are going to be 20% stronger. That's worth it. That's a risk I'm willing to take. Let's do that thing. And the seeds become more complex and more involved as you go. Not to mention that later on, in addition to finding seeds and treasure chests and stuff, you can start splicing the seeds together to get new seeds with better effects or worse effects, depending on what you put together, to further customize your events. And then you can do more by nurturing a tree, which will create and add more effects that can exist on the seeds themselves. The game gets really involved with you customizing what runs you want, what you want to exist in your runs. And I do like that. I wish more games gave you that sense of control over what your roguelike run will be, because I feel like that's like one of the more untapped elements of this genre, this very, very saturated genre of game. But aside from that, the other elements that come into play is, I mentioned dark matter multiple times earlier. It's one of the resources that you can collect on your runs, and you can use that to boost certain parameters of your character, such as how much health they start with, how much damage they do, and as you gain more of it and spend more of it, you unlock additional tiers with which to spend even more of it in those respective environments. You get resources in the form of, like, I guess, like minerals, which you can use to enhance the different weapons you can find. So not so much a specific weapon, but the weapon type. So you can spend like two of that resource to make it so that your gun capacity has more ammo and more, you know, sub-weapon ammo, which is good because you want to shoot the living snot out of that gun because that's the best weapon in the game. And then, as that, you can also like use like a forge to upgrade more weapons there. And I can't remember, there was like one other thing I had unlocked with a freaking like an ethereal being, but I can't remember what the heck that was for the life of me right now. It makes me sad because I should. But ultimately, there's a lot that's going on in this game. There's a lot to access. In fact, I'd say the only thing that makes me sad, but it's kind of minor when you factor in what this genre is like, is that I wish that the environments themselves had more variety in the stuff you'd encounter in each general space. I feel like the enemy variety is decent enough. They gain a bit of extra mileage in the fact that they have enemies that are like the same type, but they come in different varieties. Like, for example, the ice region has like Vikings. One Viking has a hammer, one type has a sword, and depending on which Viking you see determines what attack type they're going to have. But you won't know it until you get used to that. At first, I was like, oh, crap, lightning bolt. And I'm like, okay, the lightning bolt's coming again. Why is he spinning in a circle? That doesn't even make sense. Oh, the sword guys spin in a circle. The hammer guys drop the lightning. And other enemy types work like that, too. And as you get used to it, you start to see, okay, at first you start to be a little bit cautious, like, which enemy type is that? I got to be mindful because the attack can hit from across the screen if it's the wrong guy. And then you get used to it and you start to kind of plan around that. So the game... Also, I wish the music were a little more action-y. And what do I mean by that? Well, the music is fine. I like the music, but it doesn't get me pumped, which is funny because the intro theme does. I don't know what it is about that. It's like, oh, man, time for a rocking adventure in this world we're in with the King of Darkness. And you get to it, it's like, oh, wow, Jesus. There we go. He's all ethereal and haunty. But anyway, the game, I think, is good. I feel like I want more people just to play Eterna Noctis, though, because that is one of the more unsung great roguelikes, but the only issue being that some would and reasonably would find it really too hard to play through. This game is a way to experience some of what that game provided without the difficulty being anywhere near as brutally punishing. I mean, like, I think the worst platform I've come across was like the occasional spike four where I have to kind of jump, dash in the air, and then jump again before hitting the spikes. And if you do hit the spikes, it's not a one-hit kill. So I think it's fairly fair with what it's doing. And if it's not fair at the first, you'll juice up eventually with your spent points and become a force to be reckoned with. So this is a good game.
Cool. Well, it clocks in at 20 bucks. What is your verdict?
I think it's a buy. And see, right there is how you know. Brooke is the master of this kind of thing. She's got this on lock, man. Telling you. You're like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, no.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
I was just thinking about how I spoke of the game, and I'm like, how would Brooke have reviewed this game? And I feel like there would have been some meat in those potatoes. But the point of the matter is, this game is freaking awesome, and it is a good bite. Pick it up.
I'm crying. Hold on. Okay, that's all. I'm just crying. Thanks, dude. But I don't feel that way. Okay.
Brooke, what are your thoughts on Summum Eterna?
I think it's a buy it. You want to know why? Because I'm
yes.
not only the 420th Purnell fan, but I'm also the number one. I don't know.
No,
I'm going to mute. That was really bad.
That is
deep. No, it was fine. It was there it is. Chris nailed it. It was deep cut.
You might be 420, but you're number one in our hearts.
Aw. I'm crying again.
You've been crying twice, Beth.
Moving on. Next games to talk about are Cyber Citizen Shockman and Cyber Citizen Shockman 2, both developed by Extreme and Shinyaden, published by Rattlake Games. Shockman released May 19th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $5.99. Cyber Citizen Shockman 2 released September 22nd. Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $5.99. In Cyber Citizen Shockman, you'll shoot and slash your way through robots rampaging in Shockman's town, and then jump, fly, and blast your way through nostalgic gaming. Initially released in 92 with Cyber Citizen Shockman 2, A New Menace, bringing its nostalgic flavor of platform action to consoles. Chris, tell us about your time with these two games.
Well, first I have to start off with a joke that's also a callback to Purnell's review. Like Purnell, I was chosen.
Oh my god.
The Japanese title of the first game is Kaizo Chojin Shibinenmon.
I'm happy with that.
Also, Chojin is the Japanese word for superhero, so you see, it works. Anyway. Thank you, everybody.
You'll be here always, folks.
Okay, so, yes, these games are very, very exciting to me because, you know, the Switch... well, I'm reviewing these on the Switch, and so I'm using the Switch I'm name dropping the Switch, but honestly, this applies to modern gaming in general. We are hashtag blessed in getting like lots and lots of retro games that we missed the first time, and usually with brand new translations and like, you know, hitherto unseen benefits and QOL improvements. And I'm just so excited to be somebody who likes, you know, old pixely games because, man, they're doing us right for the most part. And this is, you know, basically a much less represented system that we rarely see even in today's, like, you know, sort of diamond mind of, you know, or diamond mine of, you know, digging up the old classics and shining them up. The TurboGrafx, we don't see a lot of TurboGrafx stuff appear nowadays, but these are two games, one of which was never released in the US, that we are now seeing today thanks to Rattalaika. That alone is exciting, but let's actually talk about the games. So we have Cyber Citizen Shockman. We'll talk about the first game first. So basically, this is a side-scrolling action platformer, mostly involving swords, but occasionally involving a charged blast. This is a one or two player game with two different, you know, characters that are available here that are whose names should be on my screen right now, but they are not. That's okay. It's because I was actually playing the game, and so I didn't reset it. But, they actually they got localized names of Arnold and Sonya in the second game, but we'll get to that in just a second. So you select your character. One's a boy, one's a girl. And they're basically identical, I mean, as far as like what they can do. So Tasuke and Kyapiko. Kyapiko. That's the two characters. And basically you start off talking to this doctor who's like, hey, by the way, I turned you into a cyber shock man, so that you can take down this evil guy. Don't worry, I'll put you back to normal once you save the town. You got 18 days to do it, so get cracking. And so I'm so glad that they actually translated this game, because that's a great intro to the adventure. The doctor, by the way, like, has a very you know, seems like kind of a southern, you know, all the G's are replaced with apostrophes kind of way of talking, which makes me think he has a Kansai accent in Japan. That's getting a little nerdy in terms of like translation choices stuff, but there it is. So what you get is a world map with 18 stages on it, and it is up to you to go through these stages on a path going towards the final dungeon. There's actually several branching paths that all end up at this final dungeon, which suspiciously has a big giant skull on it. You know, shout outs to Dr. Wily. And but this is the Evul group, EVUL, so don't even think that this is Dr. Wily. So, you know, laid out like this, it kind of gives you a little bit of a Bionic Commando feel. But what it really is that basically as you go on the map and go through the stages, each stage has a reward at the end of it, some of which are permanent upgrades to your character, including a sword that is much, much, much stronger than your current sword, a full life bar instead of the half life bar that you start off with, better armor, all kinds of better stuff. One stage even gives you, the sheriff in the town gives you permission to use your charge beam within city limits. Otherwise, you can't use your charge beam, which is, by the way, your only projectile weapon. So yeah, you could choose to move to any one of these stages. You can also, between stages, because... So, you have infinite lives in this game, right? Even though you have to start the stage over every time, the thing that you don't have is infinite time. You have 18 days to complete your task, and if you die too many times, the day may pass without you having made any progress. I will say I managed to beat this game for the first time before 18 days had passed, so I actually don't even know what happens when 18 days pass. I imagine it just takes you back to the title screen, like as if you were to choose no to continue. But yeah, like that, you have a time limit here, so you do have a responsibility to keep your lives up, and that ain't no easy task. So the actual stages are very short platforming stages that feature, you know, enemies that swoop down, enemies that run left to right, enemies that shoot missiles straight for your face. And you have, like, for the most part, you have your sword and your very slow walking speed to deal with those people. This is one of those kind of games. You'd see them occasionally. I've really racked my brain to try and remember which NES game I actually beat that has this style of movement. But it's where you start off slow and build up momentum, and then when you go to stop, your character actually keeps going, but slower. You know, it's slippery. It has very, like, ice-level physics, as far as that goes, in an effort to be more realistic. Like, there's some games that just do that. It's kind of like, in an exaggerated way, it's a little bit like Super Mario Brothers 2 when you're on the ice levels, you know? So, it's not actually that bad. I shouldn't say that. They are slippery physics. So you got to get used to that. You got to get used to your sword, the fact that you can't use your sword when you're ducking, the fact that your charge beam takes forever. You know, there's lots of things to like deal with in terms of like how your character moves and acts. And then at the end of every short stage, you get a boss fight. The boss fights are not very varied. I think I counted 3 different boss types across 18 levels. So you're going to be seeing the same 3-headed dragon a lot in this game. Which is fine, because, like I said, it's, you know, it's challenging as it is. You know, it's like you're kind of more going to be focused on survival than being like, I want a new original monster. At least if you're me. But the cool thing is, and this is also true for the second game, this being a modern retelling of a classic game, you have options. You have a rewind function, which is very handy. You have a cheat menu where you can just toggle on straight up invincibility. You can also just give yourself $10,000 anytime you want. Money in the game, by the way, is for purchasing upgrades, purchasing hints. There's a different hint when you're standing on each of the squares that tells you like which level is going to have which upgrade in case you want to choose like a specific path. Like I said, it's four levels to the end unless you want to do all 18, you know, but you'll miss out on the power up is the problem. But yeah, like you can purchase your way through the game. Like I said, you can repair yourself so you don't go into the next stage with the same low energy that you left the previous stage out of, because you don't get health refills between stages. All that good stuff. So yeah, you get those options. You get save states, load states, and they even threw in a gallery that includes images of the case and card. Just illustrations of like the different characters, mostly in the first game, at least they're all black and white. And then you get the instruction manual, which is presented all in Japanese. So, you know, good luck with that if you decide to refer to the instruction book for any kind of hints or anything. Now, they did not translate that, unlike the other Masayo game that I reviewed, which was the Assault Suit Lenos. Because that one, they actually did translate the instruction book. But anyways, so that's the first game. Like I said, it's run and jump, sword slashing, slow moving, running around on a map and trying to get to the end stage boss so that you can get your humanity back from this mad doctor who took it away from you in order to achieve a lofty goal. Again, this is not really explained or anything. He's just like, hey, surprise, you're a cyber citizen shock man now. But anyways, so then we get to the second game. The second game is actually entirely different, except that it's the same characters. But this is the game, and I think Purnell even wanted to say that he had played this one before, but this is the one game that did come to the United States before. And this is, like I said, Cyber Citizen Shockman 2, or The New Menace, which now has much tighter controls and also has, you know, your primary weapon is going to be a shooty shoot rather than a stabby stab. You still have the hold down the shoot button to do a charge beam, and you're going to need that for most bosses. But yeah, the story is basically that the doctor's like, okay, now come to my lab, I'll turn you back into a human, and when you get over there, then he gets kidnapped, and then there's a new evil, so you gotta kinda put that on the back burner before, but your character's kinda like, you know, he's been saying that he's gonna turn us back to normal, but he has never done that, so this is kind of, starting to get a little sus. So yeah, anyways, if you, so this one is actually a linear path of levels, platforming and shooting, like I said. Action is much faster, controls are much tighter, and for two levels of the eight or so, you actually get to do just a standard side-scrolling shmup, one of which is underwater, one of which is in the air. Hello, Super Mario Land. But yeah, that's they're actually really fun. I found the shmup sections are not very hard. That's usually the case when a game is a hybrid like this. But the actual action sections, especially the bosses, can be very, very challenging. They're nice, big, large bosses. And then kind of like, what would you call it? Gunstar Heroes on the Genesis. You have like these, not really cutscenes, but just dialogue that plays at the bottom of the screen between, well, there's some cutscenes between your characters and some other characters that are introduced in the game, including, you know, a bad guy that that was created just to kill you, but you have to try and convince them to be on your side. You know, the old tropes. You know, that all comes to a head. I'm not going to spoil any of it for you, but basically there's new characters to talk to. And again, this is a one or two player game, which is kind of cool. The particular version here is actually offers three different versions of the game. You can play as the original Japanese game. You can play the original translated version from 1992, or you can play the new translation from 2023. I played all the way through the 2023 version, and it's quite nice. But yes, the 1992 version, which I did play a few levels of, is a much rougher translation that it gets the message across. But man, yeah, definitely play the new translation if you're playing this for the first time. This one also has a thing called bits, which is it's basically you have to. It's a super powered charge, right? That can really, really help in situations, but you have to charge your laser for 7 whole seconds. And these are limited. You have to find them before you can use them. So this game also has a cheats menu, and on top of invincibility, like the other game, it also gives you an easy bosses toggle where it lowers the boss's life bar to 1 so that just a few shots will knock them out. They will also give you infinite bits so that you can have super-powered laser shots if you so desire. Of course, also comes with the rewind, the save state, load state, fast forward as well, which is odd. And also, wait a minute, does this one have... Yeah, this one does have fast forward, which is, like I said, very weird. I don't get it. They also have, like, the video modes, CRT filters, all that kind of scale filters and shaders and whatever. I always ignore those. I just put it on perfect mode and take all the shaders out. fully, customizable controls on both games. And this one also has a gallery where you actually can get the English manual as well as the illustrations from both the Japanese version and the US version. So lots of good stuff here. I mean, this is stuff you typically see, like, when they did this for Assault Suit Lanos, it was like $30 or something. But these are coming in a lot cheaper, and you still get the good stuff. So it there.
Like these are two good packages that you could pick up, yes?
Yes, I would say. Like I said, these are TurboGrafx games of some vintage, so some players may not find them as tight and snappy and easy as something like a Mega Man or whatever that you might expect from this kind of game. But I... absolutely, even without any of the cheats turned on, I just kept coming back to this one because, yeah, the first game, really, really interesting, and I really liked exploring it and, like, beating these short levels, trying within the time limit and stuff. Like I said, I did beat it, but I used a cheat to get through the end, so I'm actually looking to beat it without cheats. Shockman 2 is easier, but still, like, those bosses will take you down and stuff. Like, these are some nice, challenging, colorful games with excellent music, by the way. I didn't even touch on that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I was actually going to say, if your band needs a track to cover, I bought the first re-release of this series specifically because for years, I'm talking since like 2011, I've been going back to the same video to listen to the first stage theme of that game. I had nauseam at work just to get through work days. Like that music is really good. And the second game... like, I bought that thinking it was like Mega Man, because I was like a freaking 12 years old or whatever. I was like, oh, it's like a Mega Man game. And of course it wasn't, but it was still freaking great. And that was the one I kept replaying because, like you said, the music was so good. I just, even though I'd already beaten it, I wanted to hear it again. And this is before you had MP3s, so.
Right, for sure. Yeah. And super, super good music on these two games. So definitely check it out for that. And by the way, one of the other control things that in the second game specifically that's really beneficial is you can assign an auto fire, turbo fire button. Because otherwise, even in the shmup sections, you got to keep tapping that Y button. So very nice that they included that too. So props to them for that.
Nice. So $5.99 each. What are your verdicts on the two of these games?
Yeah, I'm going to give them both a buy it. I would say that, you'll be fine if you just want to get Shockman 2 and you want to skip Shockman 1 because, like I said, the controls are a little, of the time. I mean, these are pretty close together games. It's just that, like I said, 89 is going to have controls that will remind you of like an unlicensed NES game kind of deal. But yeah. I still had a lot of fun with it, and like I said, that's my personal taste. I would say they're both buy it. And like I said, they're just excellent ports that, like I said, should definitely be supported because we need to get more TurboGrafx games out here on the new systems.
Yes, we do. And I want them to bring Shibubi Man 3 because I've been waiting for that one for a long ass time.
Yeah. There is a third game that has yet to come out too, over here. So We're hoping Rattalaika strikes a third time.
We will find
to
out.
Shock Manus all again. Chosen one.
Chosen one. Shock us again, man.
All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Wandering Sword, developed by the Swordman Studio, published by Spiral Up Games. Released September 15th on Steam for $24.99. Wandering Sword is a Chinese martial arts RPG where you play as a young swordsman caught up in a feud and nearly dies. Escaping the event puts you on the path of pursuing the highest form of martial arts, exploring the pugilistic world to become the great hero you were always destined to be. Brunel, are you the hero you were always destined to be?
Well, yes, but that was before I played Wandering Sword. Now, I'm just twice the hero I was always meant to be.
Yeah.
So, this game is one that I think will take getting used to for a lot of people, but I do believe if you give it the time it deserves, I think there is some quality gameplay to be had here. Get this right out of the way. If you come into this and go, oh, they ripped off Octopath Traveler's graphics, please shut up. Octopath came up with this. I love them for that. But the last thing we need is for that graphic style to be locked in with that company. I think they do a good job with it here, too. And more of a good thing can't be bad, right? I mean
Octopath Traveler just got it. Octopath Traveler just got it from Paper Mario.
There we go. See, they got it from Paper Mario. Like, let people utilize cool graphic tricks to make games they want. And in the case of this game, they did that. You play as a character that goes by the name of Yu Wen. They call him Yu for short. This man is sort of a mercenary for hire of sorts. Takes on jobs to help people, you know, for good cash. But unfortunately, he has a really, really bad work day where pretty much everything he's... I'm not going to go into the specifics of what happens because the intro is actually pretty interesting. But everything he's come to know just goes up in smoke, just like that, through the sheer happenstance. He finds himself in a situation where he is indebted to a man who saves his life. And in the process of doing so, also ends up teaching him a little bit about, you know, some various martial arts techniques. When that individual ends up passing away due to unfortunate circumstances, he takes it upon himself to not only want to get revenge for what happened in the previous situation, but now also kind of take up the mantle of the person who now has passed away by basically watching out for the martial arts technique that he left in his care, as well as his daughter. And that pretty much triggers your adventure, which of course blossoms into something more. But what ends up happening here is you have a game that is a typical, it's an RPG for the most part, but the battles themselves are of the tactical variety, which I think is pretty interesting. As you go around the game, your character can do typical harvesting effects, like to pick up items that have way too many uses, whether using the barter with NPCs for money and items or to, you know, basically to sell for money or to give to people. And I'll talk about what the point of that is later. But you'll be doing that. You'll be going from different to different locales and be via a world map, which you'll walk around and eventually go into different locations. But eventually you'll be getting into combat situations. Combat is, like I said, it's a strategy build when you get to an actual battle because you're on a grid and you have to actually maneuver your characters into different locations to get them within range of a variety of attacks. But where this game differs a bit in a lot of games of this type is in how battles actually commence as far as your attacks are concerned. Because attacks come in six different varieties. And there are different classes, so it's like normal battle, to normal skills, specials, mighties, uniques, lightness, and cultivation. I am not going to go on to what each of those are because it's ridiculous, but just know there's six different elements or types of attacks. You can learn these different attacks from martial arts manuals that you'll come across throughout the game, and you can equip them. And they're also associated with the weapon type you're using, too. So, for example, if you're using the fist weapon, you'll get access to, like, Mighty Blow. But if you're using the saber, you'll get, like, Blue Sky Slash, which is specifically for that type of weapon. You can equip up to four different types of attacks on each of these types of attacks. So, essentially, you can have up to, like, 24 different attacks established, I'm just hypothetically speaking here. But each attack has a cooldown. So let's say, for example, you decide to use the mighty skill of, like, I don't know, like, freaking, like, Raging Blast or something, like Flame and Saber's Trial. You decide to use that. It has a cooldown of 2 turns. So, not only is that skill itself unusable for 2 turns, but every skill you have selected in that classification of mighty skills is also on cooldown, and you can't use any of those. So, you want to choose the attacks of a category that you want to use and choose correctly, because the other guys will be on lockdown until the cooldown runs up. It's interesting, too, because you will probably not get all the flavor text that these attacks have for them, because there's meaty descriptions for what each one can do, special abilities and such. And half the time, I didn't even pay much attention to that. I was just like, okay, how much damage did it do? How much magic did it cost? The cooldown. And the range. That's all I care about. Everything else is just vanilla for me at this point. Though, I'm sure later on I'm going to need it, because, quite frankly, I'm already getting my ass kicked, but that's also, I think, the nature of the game as well. So, in addition to learning these skills, you can upgrade them and advance them, too. When you fight battles and defeat enemies, you'll get martial points, and martial points can be spent to upgrade your actual different attacks to make them stronger. But in addition to that, even, you can also spend another skill currency to advance. Basically, think of it as like pressure points or chakra points on the body. That's how they're represented anyway. But they represent different stats like your strength, your constitution, your vitality. And when you go to those, you can upgrade those to increase those stats. But then you can also go to different nodes on those to increase those stats even further. If you couldn't tell, there's a lot of upgrading you're going to be doing to your characters in this game, in addition to the normal equipment that you're going to equip on people. But characters, where do you get them? How do you get them? Well, that's another thing that's pretty different about this game compared to a lot of others. Because even though you may occasionally have the story characters that will join you for a mission or two or whatnot, one of the primary ways you get characters in this game is by interacting with them in towns. A lot of the characters in this game can be interacted with. And sometimes it's just for simple things like you want to trade with them to eventually get them to like you to give you some items. But there are a number of characters that if you give them the specific types of items they want, you'll build affinity with them, just like any other character. But once you reach a certain point, you can actually spar with them, have actual battles with them. And if you beat them, you'll get various items from them or different like perks. They might say, oh, man, way to kick my ass. Here, have a bowl of soup. And that's pretty awesome, right? Because your joints are probably really sore from that ass kicking you just dispensed. But if you can increase the affinity even further to about 60 or so, you can request that they join your party and they'll come along with you flat out. You have a new party member. It could get a little annoying, and essentially, at first, when you have to find the right items that they need and then have enough of that item type to feed these people, but you will be getting a lot of items in treasure chests, winning battles, what have you. My inventory stayed stocked. Now, if you come across a jerk whose only favorite thing is masterpiece paintings, well, then that's a little bit of a problem, because paintings don't just fall out of the sky. They cost money, and I'm hurting for money. I have lots of stuff, but not that mean green. So, I'm sorry, Ian. but the game is honestly pretty interesting in that capacity. The writing, it could go either way depending on who you are, because it's not tongue-in-cheek. It's very much like a martial arts movie style of writing. How the characters interact with each other, dialogue. I don't think there's ever been a time in this game where I laughed. And I'm not saying that in a mean way. I'm saying it in literally, this is like I'm watching a martial arts movie and how these characters interact with each other. And I expect it to be as such. So, very dry, very direct. Also, this is going to sound lame, but forgive me. I'm just going to point out in advance, I'm bad with names in other games. I'm really bad with names in this game. So you might find yourself being like, my friend with the staff, the guy that likes fighting oxes in the wood or boar in the woods, he's on my party and he's kicking ass. Like, you might find yourself doing stuff like that too, which is fine, you know, because I think the other trade-off to that is you use people long enough and you interact with them long enough, their names will just kind of naturally just bind to your memory. And then the next thing you know, that's Jing or that's Shi Wu. And you're like, I'm good, I got it. That's how I know they've been in my party long enough. I got their names down. These people are awesome. But I find the game to be pretty cool. There's some issues I've been having, but I think they might be resolved if you're not being a Purnell on the Steam Deck type. But they do have button mapping, so I believe that they intend for this to ultimately get played on a controller. So I feel like there's still valid concerns to make. Getting used to pivoting between selecting characters and selecting the abilities and reviewing the actual battle map and the situation on the battle map, that takes some serious getting used to. For example, if you want to move a character into position to do a battle to an attack on their turn, you can walk them up to a slot and push A to put them there. But at that point, the game kind of auto sets you to have an attack established for them to use. You can input a combination of buttons to quick use a skill. But by doing that, you forego A, the ability to choose other skills that you might have associated with that skill type. Two, you don't get to see what the range is or the description of the skill because you can't read it unless you go to actually review it proper. And it gets to be a little janky sometimes. You might find yourself like, man, I can't read this. So you have to actively know to push the R trigger and then go left and right with a cursor indicator. It's kind of hard to see sometimes. It's very small. But then once you get it to select, then you can actually read the stuff that's there and select between the things. But I still have not gotten to the point where I have like a awesome flow with reviewing what the enemy types are like in the game and stuff like that. So it takes a little getting used to maneuver the battlefield info and like reviewing what attacks you want to use and stuff. But that's a small penance, I think, because I do think the battle music is good. I think the battles themselves are pretty cool to engage in. I think the battle effects are pretty great, too, especially when you get their special attacks, because some of the attacks are like to the point where rather than just be like, I did my attack, it'll actually put it in big white letters like the name of their attack, as I'm saying, they're using their special family move or something like that, their ultimate skill, and then they'll enact it, and it actually looks pretty cool. Even the earlier ones do. So I think that covers that does a good job with carrying the martial arts vibe too, like special attack, Saha hell, and you're like bam, and you do the thing with the waves, and that's pretty cool. This is a game that I wonder how much appeal it's going to have, how many people are going to take to it, but I do feel like it deserves love. I do feel as though this deserves to get the attention of more players and not just get left in the vices being like, oh, that's that game, it looks like Octopath Traveler, because it is a good game. It's going to take some getting used to, especially because, like I said, the way you get new characters, when you can find them for that matter, the fact that if you don't get those new characters and if you don't spend skill points and get new abilities and stuff like, you know, like people like Parnell tend to suck at doing, you will die because the enemies will beat the ever-loving snot out of you because he is you, both you and you, the character. I'll be here all week, folks. But because, quite frankly, if you don't do that, they typically can and will overpower the main character. That's just how this game is laid out to be. So it's good to go. It's dangerous to go alone. Take friends by feeding them lots of soup or masterpiece art or crayons. Whatever they want, baby wants, baby gets it. This game is good. You should buy it. That's it.
Well, you already answered the question then, so I guess we're done.
Da-da-da, yeah.
All right, give us the official word. What's your verdict?
I think Wandering Dragon. I keep calling it Wandering Dragon. That's what happens when you make it a martial arts game. I think Wandering Sword is a good time and a good buy.
Beans. All right, we are done with this episode. We made it through. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Aki, thanks for hanging out the whole show, even though we had nothing for you to do.
It's all good.
You're the glue that keeps this show together, obviously. I think it's glue. Well,
thank her. She knows why she was here. She's happy. Aki's like, I really know what I came here for.
Yeah, yeah, I came here to flirt with Brooke. It's fine.
Yeah.
You got what she came for. Don't thank her.
Well, anyway, since I have a doctor's appointment in the morning, I'm going to wrap up the show by playing a song called Medical Insurance from our friend Joshua Morse off the Bound Together project from way too long ago. I love Bound Together, though.
Bound Together.
Like a plan.
Now.
So does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Good luck at the doctor tomorrow, Joe.
Those are good. Well, those soon. Are good final words. Don't get well. He's not sick.
Not
we
sick.
Hope. Good well. Luck with the doctor. That's why I was like, there's nothing to get. We hope that he's not sick, but get good luck at the doctor. Like Brooke said.
Yeah. Yeah. What Brooke tomorrow. Said.
No, you're not.
Please try not to die tomorrow. Thanks.
Yeah, don't die on my birthday.
Welcome. Thank you.